Blog Talk Radio.
He has arrived. He has returned. It is the end of the world as we know it. But first,
it's time to get funky up in here.
Can somebody call my mama? It's about to get funky up in here.
Somebody please call his mama and let him know that O-Forms Podcast is on blogtalkradio.com.
Good evening, everybody. It is June 16th. I am Sean, and with me, as always, is Clowny. Clowny, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine, sir. How are you?
I'm doing all right. So, we have gone another week. Actually, you know, being on the air and not skipping a podcast or a week or something like that. It's craziness. That's what, three in a row now?
Yeah, three in a row. Consistent scheduling. Who would have thunk it?
Yeah, I know. That's going to definitely increase our ratings.
Exactly.
The big news that, of course, we have to talk about and kind of discuss first. Usually the pattern with the O-Forms podcast is that we miss a week and inevitably someone important to the wrestling industry dies or there's some huge, huge news dropping thing that happens immediately, either that day or the next. This is what I like to call the Todd effect. Since he's not here to defend himself, at least. Sadly, last week, us being on the air did not save the life of a certain individual. Of course, the big story this week has been that Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, passed away this week in what is horribly, horribly tragic news. And absolutely devastating to the wrestling industry as a whole. I'm sure, a lot to be said, and I'm, as you know, a podcast host, what you want to definitely say here is that I don't really have the words to express my feelings on the matter, other than just simply it is a horrible, terrible loss for wrestling. So I do want to go ahead and talk a little bit about just Dusty Rhodes, his impact on wrestling. And Clowny, can you go ahead and talk about kind of, I guess, your Dusty Rhodes moments and memories that you've got?
I mean, it's kind of hyperbole to use the word legend when it comes to this business, but, you know, you don't have a lot of what we have in wrestling today without Dusty Rhodes, you know, from not only just in the in-ring capacity on the microphone, but backstage as a booker. I mean, if you're setting up a Mount Rushmore of, you know, legendary NWA names, he's up there at the very tippy top of that list in that rarefied air of maybe three or four people. I mean, he was as big and important to wrestling in the 70s and 80s as anyone.
Mm-hmm. And truthfully, I mean, without Dusty Rhodes, there isn't going to be a Ric Flair. Without a Dusty Rhodes, there isn't going to be a Steve Austin and countless others. But those two in particular really spring to mind if you've ever listened to the two of them talk about Dusty and the impact that he had on their lives and their careers. You certainly can see exactly how big and important businessman is to the wrestling industry.
You can expound upon that even more. Without Dusty Rhodes, you don't have a Four Horsemen. Without Dusty Rhodes, you don't have the Koloffs. You know, without Dusty Rhodes, you don't have a lot of what modern professional wrestling is as it relates to emoting and getting your point across, you know, the modern promo. You don't have that without Dusty Rhodes. He, I don't want to say invented it, but made it the art form and revolutionized it to a point of where it is today. Without him, you just have generic, I don't like you, I want to fight you. He really brought you in and captivated you and made you feel what he was saying was the God's honest truth. You know, he did more with words than most wrestlers do with their bodies in the ring.
Yeah. And even expanding upon it further, you know, you're talking about the fact that, you know, you've got the Horsemen and Flair and Koloffs and all of that stuff in the 70s and 80s, but even moving further on, you don't have half of really the stuff that happened in WCW when he was booking the show. And you don't have, NXT doesn't necessarily have the same impact. It certainly doesn't have the same quality of people as far as taking those indie stars who've been, you know, really, really good at their in-ring abilities, but maybe haven't necessarily had the opportunity to do the emotional promo and things like that. And Dusty takes them under his wing, and we've got, you know, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, to name probably the top two right now.
Right.
Everyone that, you know, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts this last week with Remembering Dusty Rhodes. Stupidly, right before we went on the air, I watched the last part of the WWE Network special, which had everyone giving everyone from the current roster talking about Dusty and giving their recounts about his life and how big he impacted them. And it's really hard to keep your eyes from watering while watching that. So those of you who are listening haven't had the opportunity to go to the network and watch that, I highly suggest you do. And I guess the only other thing that I can say, at least, is that he will be missed. Unfortunately, I can't talk a whole ton myself about his, you know, career and his in-ring stuff because, quite frankly, as I've said many times before on this podcast, I didn't start watching until the Attitude Era. So there's knowing exactly how big of a figure he is and what he accomplished, and then there's actually seeing it, and unfortunately, I am not the person to talk about his in-ring career. Hopefully at some point in the evening we might have a certain special former and current guy who's paying the bills on Blog Talk. Member of this podcast, Todd, might be calling in. So I know he'll have a lot of thoughts about Dusty if he does have the opportunity to call in. Otherwise, Clowny, do you have any other thoughts?
I'm going to wait and see if Todd is able to call in, and I think him and I will have a good back and forth on some of the great Dusty moments. I don't want to do it right now and cut off anything he might have to say, so I'll wait for him to call in and maybe do more of a historical thing on Dusty if that happens later on tonight.
Okay. And speaking of calling in, if anyone else is out there listening and they want to call in and talk, the number to call, as always, is 949-272-9434. And if you want to talk about Dusty or what Clowny and I will be discussing next, which is Money in the Bank in Raw, we can certainly do that. But before we get to Money in the Bank in Raw, I did see another big news item Clowney that I know we got to talk about. And that is, of course, the return of King of the Mountain.
No, seriously, what are we going to talk about next?
The X Division title is getting a new faceplate.
Oh, TNA, you never stop to amuse me. Yeah, I guess we better get into that nonsense. I could use a good cheering up laugh after the downer we started off the show with.
Exactly. So, I wish I could remember who to credit on the forum with this line, but the thoughts that someone had of someone in TNA management said we should go green, and they just really misinterpreted the sentiment.
I think it was Stoney.
That is my thoughts.
I think it was Stoney that said that.
Okay, well, Stoney, you are absolutely right, and I could not agree more.
See, that's one way of looking at it. I think it was more of them trying to copy WWE. It's a green and black title with the big letter X on it. What does that remind you of?
The Divas title?
It basically looks like something D-Generation X would have created if they had ever won the WWE Championship during the Attitude Era when everybody got their own belt. It looks exactly like that.
Not enough boobs or saying suck it.
Well, give it time. Give it time. They had to work on a budget, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So their pay-per-view main event. That again, I remind people they are charging $54.95 to watch their pay-per-view main event, which the shows have already been taped and are in the can for. They decided last week, we're going to change it completely.
Mm-hmm.
And pulled the riveting, everyone dying to see match of Kurt Angle versus EC3, and waited 4 or 5 days to announce that they're bringing back a gimmick match that nobody asked for. They haven't had one.
No. Everyone asked for.
Yeah, nobody asked for that.
I read Dixie's Twitter, and she said everyone.
She has the inane ramblings of a crazy person with a psychosis. She is not to be trusted. She imagined these things, or the reflection in the mirror told her this, and she thinks that's people. But they are bringing back the King of the Mountain match, which they have not had for 6 or 7 years, and for good reason, because it is stupid. And that is going to be the big marquee match they're going to try to entice you to pay $54.95 to watch.
Yep. Now, for those of you who don't know exactly what the King of the Ring, the King of the Mountain match is,
I envy you, and I wish I had that kind of mental block that you have.
And if you want to continue to live in denial that something like this exists, tune out for the next moment or two.
And we need the prefaces. This is not the stupidest gimmick match TNA has. Keep that in mind as we're telling you this. This is not the stupidest gimmick match.
So here is the official match format per Wikipedia, which I'm going to say is a probably accurate source in all things TNA.
More likely than not.
Okay. The competitors in the match start out as ineligible to win. In order to become eligible, a wrestler must score a pinfall or submission on an opponent. The opponent who submits or is pinned is forced to spend 2 minutes in the penalty box cage. More than one wrestler can be in the cage. This often results in wrestlers fighting inside the cage or forming some sort of alliance. Once eligible, the wrestler may win the match by retrieving the belt and hanging it on the hook suspended above the ring with the aid of the ladders. A TNA official maintains possession of the belt and circles the ring, staying out of the action as much as possible. When a wrestler wishes to hang the belt, he must retrieve it from the official. Once the belt is in play, any other wrestler who is eligible may attempt to steal the belt and hang it. Once the belt has been dropped and no wrestler is attempting to hang it, a referee returns the belt to the official. The matchup is similar to the more common ladder match, in which the belt is suspended above the ring, and the winner is the one who retrieves it with the use of the ladder. The King of the Mountain match is considered backwards in nature to the ladder match, as the competitors attempt to hang the belt instead of retrieving it. On June 16, 2015, TNA announced on their website that for the first time in 6 years, the King of the Mountain match returns to Slammiversary on June 28th, live on pay-per-view at 8 p.m. Eastern Time.
For $54.95.
They left that part out.
I take issue with one small bit of that description. The part where it says it's similar to a ladder match, except for the part where it has absolutely nothing in similarity to a ladder match, except that the fact there's a ladder in the ring.
Okay.
The similarities
now,
die there.
I'm going to just ask one question, and I already know the answer. Vince Russo match, right?
I believe so. I am 95% sure that is a Russo creation.
Okay.
It has to be, because no one with sane and capable logic would create such a buster cluck like this.
Before you say that, the very first King of the Mountain match is dated June 2nd, 2004.
Now, wait, I think I might know who was in it.
Okay.
Let's see if I can pull it off here. It was Jeff Jarrett.
Uh-huh.
AJ Styles.
Uh-huh.
Ron Killings.
Yes.
Raven.
Yes. One more.
Abyss?
No. Oh, you're so close.
Oh.
Chris Harris. We were looking for Chris Harris.
Oh, that was during his first ill-fated main event run.
Yeah. Also known as the Braden Walker.
yeah, it was Braden Walker. I invite our listeners to go on YouTube and find the three-disc retrospective of Braden Walker's career.
That was an amazing, amazing retrospective, yeah.
It really was.
Yeah. So, with that said, it being 2004, and it also being a match in which Jeff Jarrett won,
shocker,
I also see that possibility where perhaps it was not a Russo creation and it was more a Jeff Jarrett creation of, nah, see, this way I won't pin you.
It may have been some kind of weird hybrid combination of those two. I have memories of TNA at that time. Both of them are terrible.
Yep.
Dominated by Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah. At this point in time, guess exactly how many times the King of the Mountain match has actually taken place.
From then to now?
From then until now, counting the upcoming Slammiversary match.
8 or 9?
You would be correct. It has currently taken place 8 times. And the 9th time will, of course, be at Slammiversary. So,
I'm feeling right now
to all of our free listeners.
I need to say right now
this
that I am
more
in no way
than TNA has done for this pay-per-view.
I am in no way, shape, or form proud of the fact of the things I have listed off here off the top of my head so far tonight.
Yeah, doing that with no research, Clowny?
None. These are all off the top of my head, which is making me feel very, very ashamed right now. So,
as well you should.
The wealth of useless, awful wrestling knowledge that is in my mind is truly staggering. One day, Todd and I are going to have the great debate.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're going with this match for the pay-per-view out of nowhere, so I'm assuming they'll have to add in promos to their shows, which I'm sure won't won't be, you know, haphazardly thrown in the middle of nowhere or horribly mm-hmm. overdubbed by the commentary in their little closet they record in.
Mm-hmm.
Who the participants are? No idea. I'm assuming
it has not been announced.
I'm assuming it's for the world title, so I would assume Kurt Angle's in there, which Kurt Angle around ladders, that's a good place for him these days. That's what I want to see Kurt Angle doing.
It could be for the X Division title. You know,
but they say it's the main event, and they haven't main evented anything with the X Division title in about 10 years.
Yeah. By the way, this pay-per-view for $54.99 has the matches of the following. James Storm versus Magnus.
Which right now is the de facto main event. Because the main
to be announced versus to be announced versus to be announced versus to be announced versus to be announced in the King of the Mountain match. The Wolves versus the Dirty Heels. And Taryn Terrell versus Awesome Kong versus Brooke in a three-way match for the TNA Knockouts Championship.
I can't reach for my credit
card. That's the entire pay-per-view.
Yep. And it's next weekend.
For $54.99.
And they have been building to and promoting this show on their program for at least a month now.
Yep.
And I can't believe I'm going to defend them in this respect, but WWE has built and promoted three pay-per-views in the span of a month that have been more fleshed out than this TNA show. That is one of only two pay-per-views they have to run a year, or choose to run. I don't know. I'm assuming they have to run them, because otherwise, why would they have this?
Now, in fairness to WWE, they do have an extra, like, 19 hours of television every month, every week.
This is true. But most of those are non-canon. They exist on an alternate Earth, whereas, you know, Raw is Earth Prime.
Raw is indeed Earth Prime. So, with all the discussion of TNA's pay-per-view, let's talk Money in the Bank. You know, a reverse King of the Mountain match.
Where a ladder was used for what it's supposed to be used for, climbing.
In a reverse King of the Mountain match, seven men participated to try to get a briefcase that they are going to carry around baggage claim and explain to people. And explain to TSA for the next few weeks,
In the case of the eventual winner, who tweeted out that he is using the briefcase to carry fear and ham sandwiches, but mostly fear.
The Money in the Bank pay-per-view kicked off with the Money in the Bank match, pitting Kofi Kingston, Neville, Sheamus, Roman Reigns,
Kane.
Wow, this is like Kane, thank you.
Randy Orton. And a player to be named later.
Yeah. And R-Truth.
Oh, I think it was Ziggler.
Oh, yes, Ziggler. Ziggler, thank you. So, that match happened.
Right out of the gate. Boy, did I get that prediction wrong last week.
Huh?
I said, getting right out of the gate, boy, did I get my prediction for that match wrong last week right out of the gate.
Yeah.
I mean, there was wrong, and there was cataclysmically wrong, and holy crap, was I wrong.
Yep. So,
But in my defense, I was thinking logically, and, you know, bringing that whole rational thought thing into it.
And that's something you should just never do when it comes to WWE pay-per-view.
I one of these days I'm going to learn, damn it.
Yep. So, what we're of course alluding to is the fact that Roman Reigns, at the end of the match, climbed the ladder. He was just about to win when Boogie Boo!
Bray Wyatt, who had apparently just returned from his local meat shop from a day of making ham for the ham sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
Because why in God's name was he wearing a leather cooking apron? Which, that's not really safe for in the kitchen. You know, that's a mild culinary rant there, but you really don't want to wear a leather apron in the kitchen. That's a grease accident waiting to happen.
I think he started wearing that number one at WrestleMania.
I honestly don't remember.
Okay.
To be
and
honest.
Number two is that he at least, and we'll talk about this, I guess we can talk about it now, and kind of do a mix of Money in the Bank and Raw. But for once, Bray Wyatt actually had a logical reason for the things that he did.
He was jealous of Roman's hair?
That's a little less logical, but sure. No. A couple weeks ago, when Roman Reigns had pissed off the Authority, and they decided to put him in the basically gauntlet match, first facing, I don't even remember. I want to say Kane, then Mark Henry.
Kane, Henry, and then it was Wyatt.
Yeah. Each time, his spot in the Money in the Bank match was up for grabs. And because he beat Bray Wyatt said, "Oh no, I'm going to beat you down now."
Huh.
And he cost Reigns the match. Yeah, yeah. Bray Wyatt had motivation.
He had motivation. It would have been nice if that was expounded upon a little more in the lead-up to the show, instead of him just disappearing for 2 weeks right after that match happened.
you
like
know
he
what?
Want to do.
At this point, for Bray Wyatt, I'll take it.
It's a win. It's a win for him.
It is a win for him. He had some kind of motivation and reason for what he did. So, going to take it.
So, since Roman didn't win, they obviously went with the next logical storyline choice, which would have been Kane, right, Sean? I mean, Kane won the Money in the Bank ladder match.
Kane winning the Money in the Bank ladder match would have led to the eventual Kane versus Seth Rollins match that they've clearly been teasing for months. Kane walking around as the director of operations, laughing hysterically at Seth Rollins would have been perfect. Or, even if Rollins did lose the title, then Kane just putting the champion into match after match after match to wear him down and then going, "Okay, I'm cashing in now," would have made perfect logical sense.
So that
who did
that's
we get to win?
Well, if they didn't give it, okay, so they didn't give it to Kane, so they must have given it to the young upstart, that Neville, who's really catching on with the fans and as a way to elevate someone from NXT, they give it to him, right?
Nope. No, it's a little too early for Neville to have won the Money in the Bank, which, as you know, Clowney, is a pretty much guaranteed title reign as far as becoming WWE champion is concerned. It's only not worked twice.
True. All right, so if it wasn't Neville and it wasn't Kane and it wasn't Roman, they're getting back on the Ziggler train. They gave him that big win at Survivor Series, kind of been one round, you just gave him Lana. They're giving it to Ziggler, right?
Yeah, no, they're holding off until Ziggler kind of finishes his feud with Rusev, I guess, and he's just kind of treading water for right now. So, Ziggler.
Okay. They went with Old Reliable then. They went with Randy Orton. Old Reliable, great for a main event run when you need him to. Can plug him in, brings credibility to it. They gave it to him, right?
No. The fans are pretty much done with wanting Randy Orton in the main event, at least for right now. So, can't have him win the title anymore quite yet. They don't want him to beat Triple H's record.
Well, that's everybody. I mean, they couldn't have possibly given it to the one guy in there that nobody wants to see with anything. They didn't give it to a great white rhinoceros, right?
No, they gave it to Kofi Kingston. Oh, wait a second. They didn't give it to Kofi either.
No.
Rocksteady wins. They gave the Money in the Bank briefcase to Sheamus in what I can only imagine is their way of saying, hey, when Turtles 2 comes out, you're cashing in and you're doing the talk show circuit with the WWE title. Clowny, are you there? All right. Well, Clowny seems to have disappeared for a moment, and I'm just going to assume that the thought of Sheamus winning has hurt him so deeply. So, with that said, I'm going to just pause for a brief second. All right. So, hopefully Clowny comes back. In the meantime, I'll just go ahead and continue rambling on about Money in the Bank. As we said, Sheamus gets the win. He gets to be Mr. Money in the Bank for a little while and renews his Great White Push. So that happened. And in the first of the Shady Shenanigans finishes, we did have Roman Reigns losing. Shady and Shenanigans-filled finishes. That's going to be a running theme of the evening, so hopefully you guys like your finishes, Dusty. So, while Clowny gets himself back connected through Skype to our wonderful host of Blog Talk Radio, let's go ahead and move on to the next match at Money in the Bank, which we'll talk about the pre-show match, which was R-Truth versus Kingbot. Basically, shortest version of this match that I can really explain is that R-Truth beat Barrett and decided that he was the king now. So he started now parading around with Wade Barrett's kingly garb. If you thought that that's entertaining, good on you. The next match actually on the card featured Nikki Bella defending her Divas Championship against Paige. During the match, Paige actually knocks Nikki out with the Rampage, which I guess they're now calling her finisher. And as the referee was focusing on that, Nikki rolled out and under the ring, switched places with her sister Bree. Bree gets up, and the referee realizes who it is, tells her to get out of the match, and Nikki appears magically, only to roll up Paige and retain the Divas title. So, night on Raw, we have the Divas rallying around Paige, except they weren't rallying really around Paige so much as Paige was just trying to get them to rally around her. And Divas were portrayed as not caring and selfish because that's pretty much how WWE views a lot of their women. Hopefully, this is leading to Paige getting some kind of help from individuals from NXT in order to help thwart the Divas of Nikki and Brie to get rid of their horrible championship reign and bring in, you know, the most amazing women's matches that we've seen in WWE TV for basically ever. So, fingers crossed, Charlotte, Sasha, please come save us from this title reign. Next match on the card was Ryback versus The Big Show. And if you guys like Mike Mizanin on commentary, well, this match is for you. Miz was on commentary during the match, and basically near the end, Show executes his knockout punch, And as Sho rolls right back into the ring for the pin, Miz just goes ahead and attacks the Big Sho because he's smart. Causes this disqualification. Ryback gets angry and gives shell shocks to everybody. Basically, they were continuing on the idea that Miz is kind of halfway feuding with Big Sho and with Ryback, and wants the Intercontinental title. This was clearly just a fluff match that's leading to something bigger at either Battleground or SummerSlam, more likely Battleground. And then we had the fifth match of the show, because I'm skipping over the main event for now, which was the New Day defending their tag team titles against the Primetime Players. Titus O'Neil ended up actually winning the match by pinning Xavier Woods. Kofi was not at ringside because he was hurt and injured from the previous match, or from his Money in the Bank appearance. And the Primetime Players captured their very first WWE title, or tag team title. And if you believed Michael Cole, that they've been working hard to get their tag team titles for the last 2.5 years. If my wonderful co-host could get back on the show, I would ask him, of course, how that last two and a half years for the Primetime Players has gone. So we're just going to hold on for just 2 more seconds while we continue to problem solve. Anyway, we're just, it was basically WWE and Michael Cole's way of saying, hey, remember when we split these two up and had them fighting and feuding and then did absolutely nothing with them for the last 2.5 years? Yeah, let's just forget about that. And Primetime Players never split up. And, yeah. And then last night on Raw, we had a 6-man tag team match. We had Kofi and Xavier and Big E facing the 6-man, the 3-man team of the Primetime Players and Neville, in which Michael Cole was at least happy that he could recognize which one Neville was, out of that group. And for the record, doing this by yourself is not as fun. So if anyone wants to call in and just talk, the number to call, 949-272-9434. So while we continue to wait for Clowney, and he is having issues currently with Blog Talk and or Skype. Let's see. What else happened on the pay-per-view? We'll talk about, I'm sure, almost all of this again very, very quickly once Clowney gets back on. The co-main event featured Seth Rollins versus Dean Ambrose in the ladder match. Basically, this was a nice, slow, methodical match. Neither of the two ladder matches really were the spot fests that some of the Money in the Bank matches have been in the past. This was a much slower paced match, and really focused more on the two men just beating the absolute crap out of each other. The climax of it featured Ambrose and Rollins climbing up, Rollins climbing and getting there first. Ambrose running up and catching him at the same time. They both pull down the title, fall off the ladder, and the Impact lifts the ring, Dean Ambrose, to let go. Therefore, your winner and still WWE World Heavyweight Champion is Seth Rollins. Rollins came out the next night on Raw to thank all of the people who helped him get where he was. Those people are, and I'm saying this in alphabetical order, Seth Rollins, Seth Rollins, Seth Rollins, Seth Rollins, armbar, Seth Rollins, and Seth Rollins. This, of course, really ingratiated Seth to the rest of the Authority, who decided, you know what, we're going to go ahead and give you a different challenger at Battleground, one who you know, you can really just try and see if you can conquer this one on your own. We will talk a little bit more about that once Clowney hopefully calls back in. This is slowly developing into a long cry for help. So the real main event of Money in the Bank, however, was, once again, Kevin Owens versus John Cena. This match actually took place right about 8:15, or my time, which would be 9:15 Eastern. Coincidentally, this is also about the start time of the NBA Finals, and also the a little bit after the start of Game of Thrones, the season finale. So at least WWE tried to keep their audience entertained when they were given those different options for their attention. And I believe we have a co-host again.
I'm back.
Clowney, are you there?
I am here. I have no earthly idea what happened, but I had to completely restart my system to get Skype to call, because every time I tried after it dropped me, it sounded like a robot had infested your soul and was slowly taking you over from the inside.
Now, I wouldn't discount that possibility from actually happening.
Valid point.
I mean...
What?
Yeah.
Just pretend that didn't happen.
Yeah.
So I apologize for that situation. Technology.
Yeah, well, you,
how does that work? How do those work?
While you were gone, you did miss my slowly falling into depression and pleading and really going through all of the symptoms of grief at the loss of anyone to talk to, because I don't know if you've tried hosting a podcast by yourself and just talking.
I did a 2-hour sportscast by myself one time.
Yeah, how'd that work out for you?
I'm still in therapy. Todd was kind enough to call to reaffirm the fact that apparently I had started sounding like Colin Cowherd, which really made me kind of want to jump out the window and inflict serious harm upon myself. So I understand your pain.
Yeah. So with that said, I briefly ran down all of the Money in the Bank matches except for the main event. We're just now getting to Owens versus Cena.
Oh, okay.
So before we talk about Owens versus Cena, let's really quickly grab Clowney's thoughts on the Divas title match.
Stupid ending. If they were trying to do an homage to a Dusty Finish, they done screwed it up. And
okay.
That was about it.
All right. The tag team title match.
Surprised by the title change. Curious to see where it goes.
Okay. The Intercontinental title match.
Went about 4.5 minutes longer than I would have liked it to.
Okay. And finally, the ladder match for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship.
I actually enjoyed that match quite a bit. Some people were down on it because they said it felt a little slow or trying to stretch things out. To me, it kind of reminded me of the Triple H, Shawn Michaels, Hell in a Cell many, many moons ago, where it mm-hmm. kind of felt like the end cap on a rivalry there. So I liked how it went down. I even liked the ending of it. That was a dusty finish kind of ending.
Yes. I completely and totally concur. Now, for the only match of the night that didn't have any major shenanigans or surprises, John Cena versus Kevin Owens.
Welcome to the main event where the finishers are made up and none of them count anyway.
So this match was definitely just as intense, if not more, than the previous match. They had all of the same, they had the major high spots that they had done previously, and at the same time they threw them in at different places. It was a very much differently paced match. The two of them were portrayed basically as complete equals, and the match truly could have gone either way. Both men kicked out of each other's finishers, I want to say twice.
At least.
Well, major finishers. I'm talking attitude adjustment and pop-up powerbomb.
Yeah,
not to mention
the
countless other high spots that they threw in and had false finishes on.
Yeah.
That was amazing. And it ended with exactly the correct finish to this match, which was John Cena getting his win back and tying the series at 1-1. So, leading us to what should now be the rubber match at Battleground. And then, after the match, Cena basically wanted to say, you know what, Owens, you truly do belong here. Let me shake your hand. And Owens said, sure, I will shake your hand. And then kick you in the balls. And then give you the powerbomb on the ring, onto the ring apron, just like I've done to Sami Zayn, and put him out for a little while. You know, like a good sport.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. If I'd have turned the pay-per-view off after that particular match, I would have been a much happier camper. And still felt like I had gotten my $54.99 worth. Wait, I'm sorry. That's the wrong price. My $9.99 worth.
Yes. I guess I have some slightly differing thoughts. I need to preface it with, I love the match. I thought it was a great match. I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
That being said, it did get just a touch too spot heavy for my liking in the last 5 minutes or so. I think they could have cut a couple of the near falls out of it, and it still would have been as compelling. I thought they kind of worked into a little bit of a trope there that a little bit kind of took me out of it just slightly. I mean, okay. I'm really just nitpicking here, but it's something that kind of stuck out to me.
Okay.
And
so, did you like the first match or this match better?
I kind of like the first match better.
So, is that because of the shock of Owens winning?
I don't think it was that. I think something about it, you know, the first time ever, it just felt like the pacing worked better in the first match. This one, at points, it seemed like they kind of rushed a little bit to get all the false finishes in. And to me, it kind of felt like it took away from the match a little bit. It was still a fantastic match. I'm really not trying to crap on it here. I promise you I'm not. It felt a little rushed near the end with them trying to get all the false finishes in. To me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I freely
admit
it's a nitpick.
I can't disagree with any of that.
I freely admit it's a nitpick.
All right. So, that was Money in the Bank. It was, you know, there. Did this pay-per-view really scream of anything other than, hey, we had 2 weeks to build this and have the third of the series happening in a month from now, so tune in for Battleground.
Pretty much. It was another kind of their show. For me, it was a two-match show. It was the Owens-Cena match and the Rollins-Ambrose ladder match, which I really, really enjoyed that match.
Yeah, I agree on both of those counts. So, So Monday night on Raw, while I was rambling on mindlessly about Money in the Bank and about, I talked a little bit about.
I thought for sure you were going to say while you meant you were watching Raw last night.
Oh, sorry. Yes, you are absolutely correct. While I was watching Raw and Clowny was having his video game gasms with Raw on in the background, I assume.
I kind of had it split-screen for part of it, and then it kind of went all E3 coverage.
Okay.
And Raw on the computer.
Okay. Well, very short recap. We had Seth Rollins come out and talk about all of the people who had helped him. He wanted to thank them for helping him win the championship and put him where he is today. Those people are in alphabetical order. Seth Rollins, Seth Rollins, Seth Rollins, Seth Rollins, armbar, Seth Rollins, and armbar.
Well, if it's in alphabetical order, shouldn't armbar have
gone
first?
When I made that joke earlier in this show, there was dead silence. This is what happens when you leave me.
I assure you it was not intentional.
I know.
That's coming from the December 10th member watch-along.
Then you're actually going to just be like, and I don't feel like watching this anymore. Oh, no, Skype won't connect anymore. Oh, what a horrible
my network seems to be crashing. I can't bring up the show. What a shame.
Yeah. Well, when we do that show, I'll just go ahead and pause it, and we'll pick it up next time.
There's no escaping it.
Yep. So, this was the angle of the night in who's going to be Seth Rollins' next opponent because he done pissed off the Authority.
Yes.
And that leads us, of course, to the return.
I'm assuming the reason they're mad at him is because he said he didn't need them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's basically the gist of it?
Yep.
Okay.
And so, in what I can only assume is a face turn for nobody, and an effort to suck all of the joy out of this for all of their audience, we have Seth Rollins being a douchebag heel, pissing off the Authority, who nobody likes and want them off of their television, and the Authority decides to bring back from suspension and use as a mercenary Brock Lesnar, who
the most over babyface on the roster.
Yeah, the most over babyface on the roster has now been brought in as the hired gun of the Authority, who no one likes, to beat up a champion that no one likes. Who's the babyface in this match? Who are we rooting for?
I'm going to root for Brock, because if I don't, he might hurt me.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to root for Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman, who shook Triple H's hand.
Yeah, that was bothersome.
In one appearance, they just completely ruined everything that had been badass about Lesnar following WrestleMania.
Let's remember this here. The last time we saw Brock Lesnar, he sort of murdered everybody. And I don't mean in a hypothetical sense. I mean, he literally murdered everyone around him.
Now, when we say literally, we mean figuratively he killed everybody. I want to go ahead and put that on the record.
I still
believe
he
actually... That is the correct usage of the word.
I still believe he actually killed Michael Cole, and what we've had for the last few months is some sort of a cyborg Vince has been working on to just shout out his pipelines.
Cyborg Michael Cole has actually called a couple of matches. Well.
Yeah. Yes.
So I cannot begin to imagine that that's a Vince McMahon creation cyborg.
Well, there's still some bugs that have to be worked out.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, even if you do mean literally the way that you think you do, still, if you had meant figuratively, it is the correct usage of the word, and I will take the opportunity to point that out just because Todd's head is somewhere exploding.
And we haven't even got the comic talk yet.
I know.
He has the power to stop all this.
Yes, yes he does. But TCU is playing in the College World Series, and so he can't be bothered.
We'll just start holding the show hostage.
Yeah.
Now we're getting Brock and Rollins at Battleground.
Yes.
When it was widely,
which is making me really want to get tickets, because we're going to get a rematch between Owens and Cena, and I'm getting a Lesnar Rollins match.
Well, I'm sure you could be able to hack into some Ticketmaster account and probably do something there. That's what you people do in that neck of the woods, isn't it? You hack into things to get things you want?
Oh.
You didn't think you were getting off with that one, did you?
Well played, sir. Well played. And
but,
all I will say is, it's not like we were hacking that team to get a competitive advantage. It was last year's Astros.
Whatever you need to say to justify it to yourselves.
Knowing what their signs were or anything like that would have actually, I think, gotten into our heads a little bit more because we'd have had to think. And therefore given them the advantage. And wait, that's not true. Last year's Astros wouldn't have had the advantage anyway.
And about 12 people have any idea what we're actually talking about right now.
We're talking about the St. Louis Cardinals being filthy, dirty cheaters and joining the likes of the Patriots. And you know what? We still win. So.
Now you're sounding like them, too. Are you going to set up a Kickstarter to pay your team's penalties now?
Oh, God, has that really happened?
That happened with the Patriots. They set up a Kickstarter to pay Tom Brady's fines.
Oh, God.
You know, Tom Brady, one of the wealthiest athletes in the history of foreverdom.
Yeah, the guy who wins the MVP last year at the Super Bowl and gave the car away for free to some rookie.
Yep.
Justifiably so. That rookie deserved it.
Yeah.
Forget his name, but damn that play.
But back to the wrestling now. I'll continue to bust on your Cardinals later on.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting
and
Brock.
When your Pirates actually, you know, win a World Series this century.
My Pirates?
We'll talk. Sorry.
My Pirates? Did you just confuse me with Damien?
I think I did. I'm sorry. I really do apologize.
Sir, I am a proud supporter of the Evil Empire.
The Yankees?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Where anybody knows about cheating, it's me. We just don't get caught.
No, you guys don't cheat. Open up your pocketbooks and buy your World Series trophies.
You're damn Skippy.
Whereas we just, you know, get amazing farm talent on the cheap, and you can go ahead and pay for their contracts for obscene amounts of time and money. You know, like A-Rod.
They make sense for the first 3 years. You don't think about those last seven.
Or in the case of A-Rod, those last 17.
Let's not talk about A-Rod. So
Yeah,
we're getting Brock and Rollins at Battleground when it was widely believed we were getting Brock and Rollins for a SummerSlam main event.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we not getting this at SummerSlam, Sean?
I'm not necessarily discounting the fact that we won't get it at SummerSlam.
I'm kind of thinking we're not. I'm kind of thinking the speculation that came out last week is going to come to fruition.
You mean that we're going to get Reigns versus Brock, the rematch? This time Seth Rollins can't interfere? And then
no.
Someone else cashes in the Money in the Bank because troll-a-lo-lo-lo?
No, I don't think that's the speculation I'm referring to.
Okay.
I think it's more the speculation of Seth Rollins' SummerSlam opponent.
Oh, you mean it's time to play the game?
Yeah, I wasn't too sure about it, but the fact they're doing Lesnar Reigns now instead of SummerSlam, I'm kind of thinking that's where we're going. Whether or
and
not it's
once
for the
again,
title, I don't know. Who the face and heel is, I don't know.
But, by God, he's got to get Lemmy to make him another song because... Sure. And all I can say is that if Seth Rollins does not win that match with a pedigree, it will be the most wasted opportunity of all time. Other than,
yeah.
Of course, just not doing that match because we really don't need Triple H. You've got plenty of a deep roster. Just book them better.
No, we're not going to be doing that. We're going to bring Motorhead out of retirement.
Okay. Well,
assuming we go that route, who is the heel, who is the face, and is the title on the line?
Seth Rollins keeps complaining and being a whiny little bitch, ergo, heel, and Triple H abuses his power, but because he's being a little bit more badass, babyface, because he'll tell people to suck it a few times.
Uh-huh. I'm just going to go with the assumption this is all leading up to some sort of Authority versus Reunited Shield war. Because why not? That doesn't make any sense either, but why not?
I think a far better SummerSlam main event would have been Seth Rollins versus Joey Mercury, as was teased during Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, but he still has ladder-induced PTSD. Plus, I think he still has to find some kryptonite to battle Superman for something or other.
He does have a little bit of a Lex Luthor look. I will give you that.
He has about 20%
but he doesn't
Luthor.
Have the gravitas of Clancy Brown.
Right. He has about 20% Luthor and about 80% Sloth from the Goonies.
Yeah, I can see that.
He kind of looks like what would happen if Luthor tried to clone himself and it came out as Bizarro.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
I'm going to keep this up until Todd calls. Every week, it's going to get more and more obscure, more and more insider and random.
You go too obscure, he won't even know what you're doing.
Exactly. We're already halfway there.
Oh, God.
So, yeah,
at some point, it's going to get so obscure, I won't know what you're talking about.
It's very possible.
Yep.
So,
all right.
Do we think Rollins walks out of the battleground with the title? What do we think happens there?
I could actually just simply see Rollins walking out on the match entirely.
I could see one of two options going.
Like, he gets suplex fittied out of the ring and just goes, no, I'm done. And Brock goes, oh, no, you are not, and chases him. Like, what's his name at the end of Happy Gilmore?
Oh!
Where he's saying, shooter,
Jaws.
I'll see you in the parking lot.
Jaws.
Yeah. Yes.
I would mark for that.
Yeah. leading to a SummerSlam rematch in which there's no disqualifications and Brock Lesnar just goes epically raping Seth Rollins the way that he did to John Cena last year at SummerSlam.
But that's not happening because we've got to get Hunter versus Rollins.
Mm-hmm.
So I have like two, maybe three theories as to what happens at SummerSlam or at Battleground. Least likely of all, Rollins beats Lesnar clean. I don't see that happening, but it's a possibility. Because, you know, the guy that Hunter's going to squish has to look really strong.
Yeah. That's not the way that you book Seth Rollins in his current character.
No. Option number two.
In any way, shape, or form.
Exactly. Option number two, Rollins retains, Sheamus cashes in on orders of the authority.
Or Lesnar wins and Sheamus cashes in.
That's also a possibility, but as angry as people were about Sheamus winning the briefcase, how much do you think that anger is going to be doubled if Sheamus is the first guy to pin Brock Lesnar in over 2 years?
I think it would be tamped down by the immediate fallout of Brock Lesnar destroying everybody. And also, I will say this for Sheamus. Brock Lesnar versus Sheamus is like the one of the number one matches that I have left that I want to see from Brock Lesnar right now. Like that is at the top of the list, and for this reason only. There will be blood, and it will not be from a blade. Those two will destroy each other.
I would be down to see the match. I think you could do it without Sheamus pinning Lesnar. I think you have Sheamus come out and cash in and screw Lesnar out of his title shot now. Then you could build that for SummerSlam. Sheamus defends against Lesnar and Rollins Triple H, which is kind of where I think we're headed.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll just have to take the old wait-and-see approach.
If that honestly goes down the way that we're talking about it, I don't know if I'm watching SummerSlam. Hashtag cancel the network.
I don't know that I'm going to go quite that far because there's still all kinds of good retro stuff there for me to watch.
Yeah. Now, this week on Raw, we also did not have John Cena at all. He was off selling injuries.
Oh, of course. The 1 week I don't watch, he doesn't show up.
Yeah. With that said, we didn't get a chance to really talk about it at the pay-per-view, during pay-per-view discussion, but when did John Cena learn how to do a Canadian Destroyer?
I don't know. He did an acceptable job of it.
Yeah.
I would be okay if he adopts that and drops the springboard stunner, because that seems like it's actually getting worse.
I disagree, only because I love the Canadian Destroyer so much as a finisher, and he would treat it as a transition move.
He's already done it with the stunner and a couple others.
Yeah.
He's trying to build
that DDT right.
Yeah. He's trying new stuff there. I'll give him credit for trying new things there. It actually didn't look that bad, but the springboard stunner is just, it's not connecting with his opponents properly. The fact that it was the setup for the finish of that match and did not connect hardly at all really irked me.
Yeah, I have to agree. With that said, Owens did deliver an amazing promo and once again shows off exactly why he is just such a good heel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the little things. This week on Raw, he said, you know, that John Cena had the audacity to be such a horrible winner by forcing him to shake his hand after the match. He could have been exactly like Kevin Owens was and just win the match and leave the ring. Clowny, what's wrong with that statement? I know I'm asking you to think back like 2 or 3 weeks.
Owens kind of celebrated a little bit?
Yeah. Owens got on the microphone and talked about how he had arrived. And the reason I point this out is because for those of you who watch NXT, this week Samoa Joe had his first match. He ended up getting the win and calling out Owens, and Owens said, "Whoa, whoa, whoa! This isn't a place where you could just win one match and get a shot at the champion. That's not how this works here." Bonnie, pop quiz: how many matches did Owens have on television before getting his title shot against Sami Zayn?
I believe it was either one or two.
It was one. He's just throwing in these nice little, hey, for those of you who are paying attention to continuity, I'm going to say something patently false.
It is nice to see.
It is really nice to see someone paying attention to continuity and treating the audience as if they should be smart enough to get that I'm being a dick right now. And you should be booing me. And you know what those people did?
They cheered him mercilessly. Oh, they actually
booed him? Well, that too. They did. He's doing an effective job of getting booed. Now, one other big thing happened on Raw with the Kevin Owens and John Cena feud, and it revolved around something that I decided to change and watch the Blackhawks game during. And that was a live special performance by Machine Gun Kelly. You may remember Machine Gun Kelly from such previous appearances as
WrestleMania 28, when he verbally filleted John Cena.
Yeah, and you might also remember Machine Gun Kelly's promising music career. No one remembers Machine Gun Kelly's promising music career. But at the end of his concert, he was greeted by a warm and welcoming Kevin Owens, who apparently said something, and Kelly decided to get in Owens' face because he had taken umbrage with whatever that statement was. And Owens kicked him in the gut, and picked him up and powerbombed him off the stage, thereby completing his babyface turn. At least that particular spot was absolutely amazing.
Yes, it probably would have been more amazing had Kelly tried to sell what happened a little more. I mean, the fact
you mean like not moving?
Yes, instead of, you know, kind of getting right up and going on about his merry way with his posse. Is that what the kids call them these days? Posses? I don't know the slang.
Yeah, I don't really know, and I just assume that they're his. I want to say friends, but
they're probably the people he pays to hang around with him, because he seems like somebody who'd have undesirable odor that you wouldn't want to be around unless you're being paid.
Yeah, yeah. We call this the Fetterline effect.
Yes, yes.
Also known as being from Cleveland.
That's a burden all upon itself.
Also known as the Miz.
Yes, yes, you come from the Mrs. people, which means you come from the same people as Ms. Dad, so probably best to just take your power bomb and be going on. But yes, he no-sold the power bomb pretty much, and as Bubba Ray Dudley so wonderfully put out on Twitter, that Mae Young took the power bomb better than Machine Gun Kelly did.
True. Very, very true.
But it worked to establish Owens as an I-don't-care badass, which would work a lot better if he was a babyface, but since he's not...
Yeah. The other thing that Owens did was he did issue an open challenge for not his NXT championship, for funsies, and that was answered by Dolph Ziggler. Was the most watchable part of Raw. All I can say after watching that match was, man, that German suplex.
I still need to go back and watch that, so...
Okay. When you do, man, that German suplex. Yeah, so really that was pretty much all of the highlights of Raw that I had and just ramblingly discussed while you were off the air briefly. So I'm going to put out a quick shout to the O-Forums chat room and see if anyone wants to call in and discuss Dusty Rhodes one more time.
This would be a good time for a call to.
Yeah, yeah. Good time for a call in. So.
If Todd doesn't call in the next 5 minutes, I'm going to go on a lengthy dissertation on the history of the multiverses. One by one.
Which multiverses are we talking? DC or Marvel?
The DC ones first.
Okay. Gotta save all the Marvel ones for next time.
Yes, yes.
See, Marvel is where I can...
There are some in the chat who are now advocating Todd not to call in. They want me to hijack
the
show.
Some people really need to learn about the multiverse.
I'm not sure 10 minutes could do it, but we can take a special section out of next week's show. We'll adapt a new segment for the show. Each week I'll discuss one of the new 52 multiverses.
Okay. I concur with that. And at the same time, I will say, Todd, if you don't call in, we're going to talk about the King of the Mountain match again.
Yeah, we'll go there. will do a full dissertational breakdown of that. And if there's still time, we'll go over the worst TNA gimmick match of all time. I don't want to have to do this, but I still to prove my point.
And while you do that, I'll possibly just hang up and let you go ramble on.
Don't get me started on the reverse battle royal, because it will go long and it will go insane. Much like the match itself.
Yeah.
And after it's over, you will feel dumbfounded and shamed of what you've just heard and witnessed.
Yeah.
Much like the match itself.
Yep. So,
apparently there's people in the chat who don't know what the reverse battle royal is. Well, you know, Sean, in the interest of our listeners who we're here for the listeners. If they have questions, we kind of have to answer it.
Hold on. Hold that thought.
Okay. I think I know what you're doing, and I've been waiting a long time for this.
When you have a question that needs to be answered, you know who to turn to. It's time for Ask Adam and Todd.
So the question is, what is the reverse battle royal? And I don't care if English Memorial says he knows what it is. Right now, you don't know what it is. The reverse battle royal is exactly what it sounds like. You fight on the outside of the ring to get into the ring.
Yep.
Then, once you're inside the ring, you try to throw people out of the ring.
Yep.
It's a multi-layered mess that only somebody on the very finest of methamphetamines could have conjured up.
And by that, of course, we mean Vince Russo.
Yes.
Now, I'm going to read the Reverse Battle Royal synopsis, just because it is extremely short, and the very first sentence, it really tells you all you need to know. Generally used in total nonstop action wrestling.
Because nobody else is dumb enough to do it.
A reverse battle royal begins with wrestlers surrounding the ring instead of being inside it. At the start of the match, they battle for half of them to get into the ring, at which point, a standard last person standing wins the battle royal.
How has this company been around longer than WCW? How? In the name of all that is holy and righteous and pure, how?
Yep.
I cannot wrap my head around that fact.
Because they also have amazing matches like the Gauntlet for the Gold.
No.
It is a variation on the Battle Royal used by Total Nonstop Action Wrestling. In this version, two wrestlers begin in the ring, with additional wrestlers entering on a set time period. Wrestlers are eliminated by being thrown over the top rope into the floor until two wrestlers are left, at which point a standard singles match begins. Because we're not the Royal Rumble.
How? Somebody just said, or Rusty just said in the chat, because of Les Vince Russo. Russo only had 2 years to ruin WCW. He was with TNA for just about a decade. 10 years of Vince freaking Russo. And they just won't die. They're a wrestling cockroach. They just will not expire. WCW ECW at least had high points. I don't know that TNA ever really did. They had moments of lucidity.
They had Christian Cage as the champion.
There was a little stretch there in 2008 and 9 where they were kind of lucid. That's about the nicest thing I can say. I just... How this company has lasted longer than WCW, I will never, ever be able to rationalize in my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. So with that, I don't think Todd is calling in. And what I can only assume that means is that he's somewhere off crying because TCU is losing in the World Series of College Baseball.
Or
I don't know that for a fact.
Or they could be winning. Or they could be winning, and he's in a lucky spot and is one of those that doesn't move or deviate from that point when a luck streak is going on.
And all I can say is that it actually is 0-0 in the bottom of the sixth. One man on, full count, one out. Go Commodores.
I don't think I've ever watched a moment of the College World Series, if I'm being totally honest here.
I haven't either. I just decided to really quickly flip to that so I could just brazenly taunt our benevolent payer of the Blog Talk Radio bills.
Talk about biting the hand that feeds you.
Go Vanderbilt.
Talk about biting the hand that feeds you. We're now just openly terrorizing the poor man.
To be fair, I'm just really trying to get that match at SummerSlam against him. He got that new theme.
And
with
God.
That, I think we have reached the end. So,
we'll have to save the. Well, next week we're going to start off with the multiverse breakdown.
Next week,
at least two
multiverses will be discussed. So, for Clowny, I am Sean, and also for Todd, this is the
O4
podcast.
On yourself.
And we will see you next week.
Take care, everyone.